Thank you so much, and welcome back, everyone. I hope, however, those 19 minutes were spent, that there was some nurturance and goodness. And as I said before, we'll just move right into the sit. So I want to invite each of us to allow our bodies to come into a posture that allows us to feel upright and alert. And this may be sitting, maybe lying down, or continuing to stand. Because the invitation is really to allow ourselves to align with these teachings, which are ennobling. Right? There's such dignity and integrity in these teachings. And can we touch into that? Imagine touching into that in an embodied way. Again, this posture allows us to feel upright and alert, taking our seat in this beautiful sangha of beautiful women that has been meeting for 20 years, I think, if not longer. In a practice that has been running for 2,600 years. I like to think that women have always met in circles, whether it's been circling by the fire or now in 2022, circling in Zoom. It's amazing. Hope one day we will all meet around a campfire. But allowing yourself to take your place in this circle, putting on the cloak of welcome and belonging. Allowing the body to rest here in this community of Dharma sisters, whether it's your first time here or you've been here since the beginning. For the anchor today, I want to invite us to stay in the body, drop into the body. Invoke, if it's helpful, one of my primary practices, which is working with the elements. One of the reasons I love this so much is it just helps interrupt what can be a continual churning of thoughts. So it may be helpful, as I did in the arriving sit, to place a hand on the heart, a hand in the belly. And even just that gentle noting of here, just be here. There's nowhere else to be. There's nothing else to do. Can you allow yourself, give yourself permission to just be here, sitting in the circle of fabulous women? And feeling as I do, as the hands move, with the movement of the breath. Sense of belonging to ourselves, arriving in ourselves. And dropping down from the energies that may or may not be swirling in the mind, coming into the body. Allowing the attention to rest, if it's helpful, in the lower half of the body. Feeling into the pelvic bowl. The bones of the pelvic bowl, the long bones of the thighs, bones of the knees and calves, and all the little tiny bones of the feet. And just resting here a moment, resting in these bones of the lower half of the body, resting upon this earth. Nothing else to do, nowhere else to be. Can we allow ourselves these moments of rest? In the company of our Dharma sisters, one breath, one inhale, one exhale. It's helpful to have the visual, as I personally do a lot, of the skeletal form. Again, pelvic bowl, long bones of the legs, the vertebrae coming up the back, the rib cage, clavicle, shoulder bones, long bones of the arms, the skull, the jawbone, These bones are made of the same stuff as Earth. We are a part of the Earth, not separate. The mind comes in with thoughts, plans, judgments, comparisons. Okay. And just letting that go. And allowing there to be a steadiness, a dedication of our attention back into the bones of the body, this earth element, this relative stillness in this fathom long form of ours, which is said to hold all the teachings. Again, nowhere else to be, nothing else to do. Can we take refuge? Can we rest in the relative stillness of our bones? Of this portable earth element that we have with us that rests upon the earth element beneath us, connecting each one of us today, tonight. And for some of us, it may be helpful, this a skillful choice, just to stay with this earth element, resting in the bones, resting in this, again, the relative stillness of the earth element, resting upon the earth element beneath us. It can serve as a beautiful counterweight when the mind is really agitated or full of thoughts. Dropping down again into the bones. It may also be perhaps more helpful to shift channels, as it were, to open up to the water element. Certainly a lot of rain in the southern US and some blessed rain in California. In other parts of the world, I'm sure, but to feel into the water element. So tangible with the moisture in our mouth or the water in our eyes. And so life-giving as the fluids of blood move, of course, through our bodies along with a myriad of other fluids. Our body, I think, is about 76%. Water. I think the brain is 80% water. The earth is, I think, 78% water. What happens when we allow our attention to rest in this flowing element that runs through our body? If it's helpful to call to mind a body of moving water, a mountain stream, a lake, the rolling of the waves in the ocean, this dance of the water element that's around us and within us, to allow ourselves to open up to this fluidity, this flow. Perhaps it's helpful to rest here. Feel the movement, fluidity of the water element. Again, can be helpful to have an accompanying image of a body of water, in part to give the mind something to do. Here, play this. Check this out. And as a way of affirming, oh, so as it is externally, so it is within. We are not separate from the natural world that supports us. And for some, it may be helpful to stay here. allowing the attention to rest and investigate this water element as experienced and felt, imagined in the body or around us, or perhaps you'd like to change the channel, as it were, yet again to the wind element, and you may be able to hear the wind element where I'm sitting. My apologies for that, but this, the wind that we can't see unless it's moving through something. Leaves, tall grasses, plants, or hair. A felt experience of a warm breeze. This wind element within our body is breath, right? Half breath in, half breath out. This life affirming, life giving movement of the wind element. Breath in, breath out. Of the wind can have a real clearing effect. Just to play here. As we allow the attention to rest on the wind element with, as experienced in this body, breath, in breath, out breath. Picturing in your mind's eye, if it's helpful, of a gentle breeze through trees, or those of you familiar with the land of Spirit Rock, the wind blowing the grasses on the hillside. Wind. Churning the autumn leaves. So it is externally, so it is within. We are not separate from the world around us. Again, you're welcome to stay here with the wind elements, or as you were in the water, or with the earth elements, or to shift again to the fire elements, which can be felt as the sun, the warming of the sun on the cool day, sun on our back, the warmth of a bonfire, an image I evoked earlier. As experienced internally as heat, noticing in the body where there is heat, where there's an absence of heat. For those of us of a certain age, the hot flashes come and go, the intensity of heat and then the cooling. How this fire element moves through the body. How the fire element, the sun, is so life-giving. And just staying with a body to feel where there is heat, where there's an absence of heat. Just noticing, investigating, not needing to control it or wish it were otherwise, like, oh, interesting. Final element of space, image of the vast blue sky above, or the vast expanse of the ocean. Space, there's always more space than anything else. First, letting yourself kind of feel into that expansive nature of the sky, the ocean's horizon. And inviting that sense in, sense of imagining, a sense of spaciousness in our own body that can often be constricted, right? You can notice the absence of space. This body can sometimes curl in on itself. It's an invitation to open to an expanded way of being in the body. And it may be literally expanding the shoulders back, leaning into the back body, allowing yourself to take up space. And then again, as it is externally, so it is within, to imagine a sense of spaciousness in the chest, in the belly, in the jaw, in the back, lower back, the neck, imagining space between the cells, space between the organs, the tissue, the fascia, the muscles. Almost as if we could drink in the sense of spaciousness, plumping up the cells. Can you allow yourself to rest in this spacious expanse of the sky, ocean's horizon, and also within this fathom long form? And for the rest of our time of sitting, I invite you to pick one element that may feel most beneficial, helpful to be in relationship with. We're just noticing which element comes to the foreground of your attention. No need to effort into anything. Just staying open to what might be beneficial to the body, to the mind, to the heart, as you relate to and investigate rest in one or more of the elements. And please know, there's no such thing as a bad sit, right? We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is to be live in this moment and in the next. So nice. Thank you, Carlita, for ringing the bell. And it's always so nice to sit together. Last week, I spoke some about perspective and how the power of shifting our perspective. And today, I think it's a thread that connects. But I wanted to explore together this, our capacity to trust ourselves and how we make decisions and how we move through the world. And I say that as someone, the family that I grew up in, a friend of mine had once shared that the greatest gift we can give our kids or those of us around it is sort of validating their sense of reality. How someone else sees the world, that we can join that. We don't have to agree with it necessarily, but we can join that reality. And the environment that I grew up in, a kid, the reality that I was experiencing, people were like, no, that's not what's happening. Then I managed to carry that forward into my marriage. In that sense, some of you may know, like, I think the sky is blue. No, it's red. Really? And that sense, if we haven't cultivated the strength to really stand and like, no, I trust my sense of something. It's this color. And to be able to hold on to that despite other people's opinions, because people are always going to have other opinions. For example, this poem by Difference of Opinion by Wendy Koop. One, he tells her that the earth is flat. He knows the facts, and that is that. In altercations fierce and long, she tries her best to prove him wrong. But he has learned to argue well. He calls her arguments unsound and often asks her not to yell. She cannot win. He stands his ground. The planet goes on being round. No, if any of you can resonate with that sense, and it doesn't have to be a dynamic between men and women, of course, but just this way that we can, in relationship with others, but also with ourselves, we can have that kind of bickering. It's like this. No, it's like this. And then it's like, who's trustworthy? Where does that sense of wisdom come from? Right? The line I quote all the time from the Metta Sutta, it is, to paraphrase it, it's one of the sublime abidings is to live, I'm really mixing it up, but to not hold on to fixed views in the sense of right and wrong. Some of you may know the poem I'm going to read. Anyway, it's Rumi's poem. The field out beyond knowing and not knowing is a field. I'll meet you there when even the words each other make no sense, to paraphrase it a little bit. But this way in which when we can put down our commitment to a fixed view of being right or wrong, there's a softening. And in that softening, I believe that's where wisdom can arise. It arises in other ways. But I think when we can put down our need to be right, our need to be right, this is how it is, this clenching that can come, we lose our capacity to touch inward, to really understand, okay, where does the wisdom and true knowing come from? And Joseph Goldstein has said, you know, wisdom never comes from thinking. He probably said it better than that. But that idea of, as I've said many times in here, the thinking mind really is not to be trusted. Right? Like, we need other parts of ourselves involved to help us make decisions, whether it's mundane decisions or these big life decisions of, I don't know which path to choose. And the mind, at least my mind, can make a pretty good argument for one way or the other. I went to law school. I can make arguments, both good and bad, in that sense of, okay, how do I really understand what's the trustworthy voice? That notion of within each of us is an inner committee, and some of those committee members are trustworthy and some are not. And not necessarily that any of them need to be bad actors, right? There may not need to be any ill will of our own internal committee members. It's just the conditioning and strategies born out of childhood or more adverse situations cause certain ways of being to develop, right? Sort of voices that can be really fear-based, understandably and strategically, than the habit of dissociating or getting small or becoming invisible. Traits somewhat, I think, more typical of women, and this often pattern of deferring to stay safe. And I'll be speaking for myself as opposed to putting it on genders. But this way of moving in the world as wanting to stay safe. And some of us grew up in environments that we were not physically safe. So then we adjust accordingly, which is great. Good job. And then what happens in adulthood? And how do we learn these conditionings that were skillful at one time? We don't need to have, doesn't need to be so dramatic as to have been physically unsafe, but just in the course of our life, the strategies we create when we're 6, 7, generally speaking, when we're an adult, they're going to be better because there's more information, more life experience, more understanding. And one of the profound gifts of this practice by sitting and watching the pattern of the mind, which I bring up every week, paying attention to what's actually happening is a way of kind of clearing up. Oh, there's that habit that I do. Is it helpful? No. Is it old and sticky and entrenched? Yeah, maybe. Okay. So then we just notice it more like, oh, here's that thing that I do without having, no committee member needs to be exiled, right? It's not, again, it's not about making anything wrong or bad. It's just, okay. I know that voice and I can feel it, and being able to with a sometimes benefit of therapy, speaking for myself, or a benefit from just being able to sit and practice, to be able to feel into what are the roots of that voice? Is it trustworthy? And it's a worthy question. Yeah, and the Dalai Lama in the Book of Joy talks about his practice that he does at 4 o'clock in the morning, and of really watching his thoughts of, is what I'm thinking true? And I'm using more Byron Katie's language. Is it true? How do I know it's true? What if it wasn't true? And being able to hold a thought, to watch a thought and inquire, oh, is this trustworthy? Is this true? How do I know? Is it really true? What if it weren't? And I'm going to guess the Dalai Lama's practice predates Byron Katie's, but the thread is very similar. This invitation and the power to be able to examine, offer the thought up, is this true? And part of why I led us through the elements this morning is, again, personally, it's much, I have much more capacity to watch the thinking mind when I'm in my body. Often the mind can sort of just get in a conflict with itself and the sort of tug aware of no, believe this, know this, and then just get a headache. So it can be easier just to drop down into the body to feel a sense of our bones, our groundedness. The great title of Bessel van der Kolk's book, Body Doesn't Lie. We have all these stories of what we want to believe is true, what we think is true, maybe it was true, being able to run it through the body. Where different stories live, different emotions live in the body, such that that can be engaged, brought into the conversation. Yeah. To make a decision just from here, we're pretty vulnerable to the sort of ebbs and flows of thoughts or our own ways in which we bring evidence in one way or the other. The body is pretty reliable. And being able to, which we do every week, that check-in, like, how is the body? Can we inquire from a neutral place? That the body might feel terrible, be in a lot of pain. Okay. Can we make enough space for, okay, this is how the body feels in this moment. Knowing, profundity of knowing, oh, this is how this body feels at rest, in times of stress, and allowing there to be an ever increasing subtlety of like, oh, I there's this body signal. When I get scared, I sort of go up and my voice gets really fast. As an example, that is probably true, but we begin to understand our own tells, as it were, right? Oh, when something's happening and I can feel it in my gut, or I feel it in my jaw bites down. And being able to, through the meditation practice of often spending time, how is the body? Again, what's the tell? Oh, I feel tightness in my stomach. Okay, what's going on? If the mind is a lot of energy, there might be anxiety. Okay, where's that anxiety living in the body? Okay, what's going on? As we endeavor to kind of, again, clear away the obscurations, the conditioning, the habits, to understand what's true, what's reliable. Oft quoted poem from Mary Oliver, The Journey, One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles, mend my life, each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough in a wild night in the road full of fallen branches and stones, but little by little, you left their voices behind and the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds. And there was a new voice, which you recognized slowly as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only thing you could save. I haven't read that in a while, and I do love that poem. And it doesn't have to necessarily be about external choices that we're making, the literalness of when we leave situations where people are like, don't go, and yet we go. But if we think of that as an exercise internally, that there's a little shoot of truth that may be sprouting, or a bud beginning to flower of truth, of inner knowing, and the voices around me be like, nope, because it's too scary, right? We're going to get in trouble, or something bad's going to happen, or it's too risky, or I can't do it, I'm not good enough, right? This cacophony of different flavors of the voices of doubt that can come in to squelch it, right? So the winds around us were terrible. Yeah. The voices shouting their bad advice. And again, not so, it can happen externally. Yes, of course, but we don't have much control over it happening out in the world. We have a lot of control. We can cultivate the means to understand or navigate skillfully what happens when that cacophony is going on inside our own minds. And to be able, again, through the practice and really becoming familiar with the habit patterns and where the mind goes left untended, where different sensations live in the body, we can start to piece apart the reliable committee members such that we can make decisions based upon wisdom and trustworthiness, that we as women in the world can really relax back into our own intuition and our own truth. And I'm guessing many of us have had experience where people are like, no, that's not right. That's not true. And this isn't about always being right. Yeah, I'm not trying to make that case because we're not. We're just going to have that be a given. So it's not so much of trying to come up with an argument and having that argument be accepted. Yes, you're right. That's always yes. It's more trusting our intuitional sense of something. And it can get tricky because I've had this experience of people like, well, I know that it's true because intuitionally I know it is. And that can kind of, we can get co-opted that way when somebody else is like, well, I have an intuitional sense and it's this. Yeah. So that it can be dangerous, I guess is what I'm saying, to, I think it just comes back to the getting fixed, you know, as opposed to an intuitive sense, an inner knowing, a reliance upon wisdom, as I feel into it, is a different energetic quality than I know. I know this is true because I think it, right there, that doesn't work because our thoughts can be so unreliable, right? Well, I feel this way. Okay. So Tara Brock's fabulous line, real but not true. So can we keep investigating? Well, I think this is what's happening. I feel this. Okay. What's in that feeling? So it's allowing ourselves the time, granting ourselves enough, meeting ourselves with enough patience to really investigate what's actually happening. And can we kind of layer by layer pull out or clear away that conditioning, the habits, the where the fear comes in, anger comes in, all of which are worthy layers to understand, but a kind of peeling, I don't really like this image, but like peeling back the layers of the onion to get to the kernel of truth, to completely mix up the metaphor of what's actually true is how I want to live. Where do I want to live from? Where do I want to be making decisions from? Whether, again, mundane or the larger life decisions. Wendell Berry's How to Be a Poet. Make a place to sit down. Sit down. be quiet. You must depend upon affection, reading, knowledge, skill, more of each than you have. Inspiration, work, growing older, patience, for patience joins time to eternity. Any readers who like your work doubt their judgment. Breathe with unconditional breath, the unconditioned air. Shun electric wire. Communicate slowly. Live a three-dimensional life, three-dimensioned life. Stay away from screens. Stay away from anything that obscures the place it is in. There are no unsacred places and desecrated. There are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. Accept what comes from silence. Make the best you can of it, of the little words that come out of silence like prayers. Prayed back to the one who prays. Make a poem that does not disturb the silence from which it came. How to be a poet, how to be a human, right? How to be a human, as I'm going to guess each of us are, because we're here in this group, in the sangha together, like how to live a life of integrity and meaning and clarity. Create a sense of silence, create that clearing in the dense busyness of our lives to understand what's actually happening. I can think this, I can feel this, reliable, maybe, maybe not. This practice allows us the skills to really investigate. And again, the intentionality of the elements of practice, like let's start here. Let's arrive in the body. Arriving, this is what the experience, this is a sensation. I'm aware of the sensation, there's truth. Yeah, I feel this sensation in my body. If my leg were asleep, okay, I could feel that. And that's trustworthy. It's a sensation, I feel it. And it sounds perhaps ridiculous, but it's a place to start, right? I can do it in this situation, starting where it's benign and the stakes are very low. And then we gradually build our capacity such that we can trust ourselves. And again, as women, many of us have been somewhat conditioned to not trust ourselves, whether it's just being in society or whatever particular package of skin and economics and religious belief and sexual orientation we came into this world with. There can be challenges to the reality that we think we have. We're like, no, that's not true. Then where do you go with that? And how do we have enough courage to stay with ourselves to be like, can I find the place from which wisdom blooms, the place from which wisdom grows? I'm gonna stop. Let's do an exercise. So I'm gonna ask you to close your eyes. And to first just come back to your body, is a lot of words for me, and just see the sense of resonance or not. Allowing 90% of your, 95% of your attention to come back into the body. And the question, what do I know to be true in this moment? And just see what comes. What do I know to be true in this moment? And it's a question of with a wide net, right? Just to kind of see what comes, what are the answers come. And sitting here, I'm in front of a screen of some sort. It's whatever time it is, the day it is. What do I know to be true? And how do I know? And I'm going to just let these both of those questions kind of linger. I would invite you to just let them repeat for a little bit. What do I know to be true about myself? What do I know to be true about myself? And how do I know? And to notice with that first question, what do I know about myself? If there are voices, critical voices, you're this, you're not this. And again, it's this real exercise in curiosity. How does this organism, this complex, multidimensional organism, respond to that question? What do I know to be true about myself? listening from a place of, huh, that's interesting. That's curious. And again, allowing the question to repeat to see, do the answers change? Is there a deepening? Is there a blankness or almost a void? What do I know to be true about myself? How do I know? This can be a complicated question, yeah. How do I know? Another way to phrase it, perhaps. What allows me to trust myself? Embedded in that question is an assumption that I do trust myself, which might not resonate as true. So imagining, I'm trustworthy. How do I know I'm trustworthy? What parts of me, what committee members are trustworthy? And some of you are like, I got nothing. Okay, so imagine. If you were to imagine a trustworthy, wise committee member or future self, what does she feel like? Who is she? And allow the person to, this again, to play in this realm of imaginal committee members. What does she look like? What form would she take? Might not even be a she. It can be animal form or have some other realm. What would it feel like? What does it feel like in the body to imagine or believe or sense or know that there are reliable and trustworthy members of this inner committee? If that languaging doesn't land, what are the who are the reliable, trustworthy allies you would pull in to guide you, human, animal, otherwise? This world is hard to navigate. It can be hard to navigate our own minds and bodies and desires and cravings and aversions. I'm a believer in we need all the help we can get to be able to make wise decisions, wise, to be able to respond wisely. So this idea of inviting in reliable allies may be a benefit. Who comes? Do you like at your dining room table of wise beings that may be available to you, that are trustworthy, that can help you land in your own truth and stand in your own truth? Can help you get to that place where you know what you have to do. The road full of fallen branches and stones, and little by little you leave those unhelpful voices behind and recognize these voices as your own. Voices that allow you to strive deeper and deeper into the world, allowing you to do and show up in the world how you want to show up. Not to save your life, but live as fully as possible. To share that goodness with the world. So thank you. I'm going to stop there. Very much appreciate it. your attention and would love to open it up for comments or questions. So thank you again, and I just look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.